Hey, I'm Sayer, and I love Marvel.
And I'm Kaylee, and I love someone who loves Marvel. In season one, we watched through all of the Infinity Saga in release order.
For Kaylee's first time.
And Sayer's 85th.
Now for season two, we're watching phase four, both of us with fresh eyes.
Sayer as a super fan.
And Kaylee as a newer fan.
No, got that.
Welcome to MCU.
And me! Okay, we got it, we got it, we got it, we got it. In this episode, we're talking about 2022's Black Panther, Wakanda Forever. And there will be spoilers. You take it.
I think you should take it. I've taken the last two.
I took the first 19.
That's true.
You do the recap.
Well, you jump in anytime you feel you want to.
Well, I will jump in when you linger.
Start to ramble.
On a point.
Yeah, okay.
You can also do my classic of just a sentence or a phrase of what this is about.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay, let me try that one. The real villain is still colonialism that put all of these marginalized communities in positions where they feel they have to fight tooth and nail to preserve what privacy they have.
Great. Do you want to do a longy as well?
Basically, T'Challa has died. Wakanda is mourning. Shuri is trying to move on, having trouble. Meanwhile, the U.S. is looking for vibranium in the ocean. They find it. Oh no, they're attacked by underwater people. The underwater people then form a bit of an alliance, but also not an alliance with Wakanda. They end up fighting. And Shuri is the new Black Panther. Yeah. And T'Challa has a son.
Yeah.
With Nakia.
Gorgeous. That was well. Well done. What do you think?
It's complicated because overall I really like the film, but I also feel like this had such a hard job because it was closing out phase four. So this is the end. This is the end of phase four for us.
Wow.
So we gotta record a new intro.
Ooh, goody.
But this had a really hard job of closing out Phase 4, and Phase 4 was a bunch of really disparate, not connected films.
Yeah.
And so I felt like this was a grand-scale film that was so out of the blue.
Mm.
Now, Doctor Strange was a grand-scale film too, but that felt like it could be contained a little bit, because Doctor Strange stuff dealing with magic, he kind of exists in a world that is outside of normal, everyday people's understanding and government's understanding.
Mm.
But this is dealing with government powers, first of all, reckoning with Wakanda being in existence and now Talokan being in existence. And that kind of large-scale conflict between Wakanda and Talokan being sort of surreptitiously spied on by the U.S., It just felt really clunky in that way. And my biggest problem with this is that the conflict felt like it should have only been half the film, and then the other half should have been something else. Like, the culmination of the big fight at the end was kind of just, who's stronger, Shuri or Namor? Then he yields because he sees she's stronger, and then they all stop fighting. And then the movie finishes.
Hmm.
And as much as what I'm going to say is a big movie trope that so many things fall into, it's not a bad movie trope. I feel like this should have been the trope of two people fighting who shouldn't really be fighting, who end up teaming up against a united enemy.
Yeah.
And as examples, like Batman versus Superman, Kong versus Godzilla, like all these things where at the end of the film, they've
realized that there's a bigger enemy.
Exactly. Yeah. They've teamed up.
And I think they were teeing us up for that in a way. I mean,
absolutely.
Maybe that'll be delivered in a later film, but I hear you. There's a structure that works for a reason, and we all feel it when it's working. I certainly got used to it through all of like the first three phases of these Marvel films, even the ones that I found a little bit more boring or just didn't get into as well. They have the structure and they have the built-in moments of like peace and calm and humor and all that, that kind of take you on a ride. And it's totally fine to mess with that structure. I'm all for that and like creatively unspooling a story in a different way. But I hear you. This movie was all plot and so many new characters being introduced that don't really get expanded upon and don't really get to show us why they're included in this film. Like, I kind of imagine, you know, when like you're in a play and someone comes to see you and they're like, oh, I wish you were in more of it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you literally said that to me the other day. Like, I wish there was more of you in
it. Yeah, I always want to see more of you on stage.
Yeah, for sure. But like, I kind of feel a little bit bad for the person who played the MIT student who had the kind of Iron Man suit.
Riri, yeah.
Riri, where like, she's like, I'm cast in a Marvel movie. And I'm imagining that her whole family comes to see it and they're like, oh, you weren't in a lot of it. Like, yeah. It kind of felt like there was some grander reason for Riri to be involved in this story, and maybe that'll come later.
Well, she is a character who becomes Ironheart, kind of inherits the Iron Man legacy.
Okay.
But I agree. The only reason she was in the film was to be a catalyst for everything to happen. She invents this machine that can find vibranium.
Yeah.
And so Talo Kahn wants to find her and kill her. And Wakanda has to protect it. Like,
yeah.
So she exists. Like, that was a good pivot point, but she's a real person. She can't just be a plot point.
She had so little to do in the film, kind of in the grand scheme of things in the film.
Yeah.
And I'm leaving it a little bit dissatisfied, although it was like a visual feast and it was gorgeous. And like, the acting is wonderful. And like, it kind of like hit all the moments. And there was like a beautiful tribute to Chadwick Boseman at the beginning. But I honestly think my favorite part of the film was the end on the beach with the burning of that dress and the visions of T'Challa, and then the mid-credit scene where Nakia says, this is my son, and he says his name is Prince T'Challa. Like, it brought a little bit of a catch in my throat.
Yeah.
That was beautiful. And that was, what, 4 minutes of the film? But I was kind of unmoved by much of the film. And I know what you mean. Like, it could have been so powerful. They were lining up our expectations of this kind of anti-imperialist alliance, as you said, between Talo Kahn and Wakanda. And then they fought each other. And yes, it would have been amazing if then it was like, they realize the real villain is blah, blah, blah. And then they go against that.
Yeah.
It didn't deliver on that, what it set us up for. And, you know, I often think about these films, like, if you brought me, like, 5 years ago to see a Marvel film, which you did, you took me to see Captain Marvel, and I hadn't seen really any of the other films. And so you take me to see that film, do I like it just as, like, a one-off? Does it work as a one-off film, or does it have to be enjoyed in the sequence of the whole series?
With all the context.
Yeah. Some of these films, I sort of feel like they don't pass that test. And I don't know why I feel like they ought to pass that test or something, but like, it feels a little exclusionary to be like, we're making this film, but you have to have watched all 26 others, including all the TV series, in order to enjoy this one.
Right.
That's happening right now. So I felt like this film kind of sat in the camp of like, you really have to have seen the other ones. Whereas Black Panther, the first Black Panther, was like unto itself. You can go and enjoy that, and like, you get everything you need to know. And sure, there's like, you know, they will say things that the reference won't really land unless you have seen the other Marvel films, but like, it's so little, it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like Black Widow could have done that as well. I know not a lot of people like Black Widow. Eternals, absolutely, because it's starting its whole new thing.
Yeah.
I know not a lot of people like Eternals either. But like, what about kind of judging these films as if they are just like standalone rather than part of a series?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. As much as I loved particularly the end of the Infinity Saga, where it really was like, okay, let's check in with our heroes. That is only earned when you have enough standalone films that you then bring together to form a cohesive story. This film, I feel like it actually kind of ended on a note that you only will feel the meaning of if you keep watching down the line and if you have watched prior films. Like, I think that to understand what was going on in this film, you really only needed to have watched the first Black Panther. There wasn't a whole lot of reference to like S.H.I.E.L.D. or stuff like that. There was a little bit of stuff with Val, and she was a callback to Falcon and Winter Soldier, which was cool. And we love Julia Louis-Dreyfus. But the way this film ended, it was kind of, like I was saying, so anticlimactic, where everything just kind of a little bit went back to the way it was before, but teeing up some kind of conflict in the future, either with Talo Kahn again, maybe, or the US is going to attack Wakanda. So I'm trying to think of it from that perspective of, if I was just taken to this, having not seen any before, I would have understood most things in the film, but I would have felt like, well, what was the point of all that? Hmm. Now I have to check into the next episode in order to have any meaning for any of this film? Hmm. Yeah, and you know, as much as the trope that I was saying is absolutely a trope that I don't want all films to fall into, sometimes it's right, and I wanted there to be something more than just a final fight between Shuri and Namor just being a strength contest. Hmm. And now I'm wondering about, you know, all the Wakandans and Talokans who were killed mm-hmm. fighting this, and suddenly their two leaders are like, just stop, we're friends now.
Yeah.
Like,
and it's like, wait, no, I saw them just murder my brother.
Yeah.
So like
what has this done to their two nations?
Right.
Like yeah. Something needs to unite them other than the fact that the captain said stop.
I mean, like, it kind of sounds like just war in general, what you just described.
Yes.
Like, you tell that story of, like, Christmas in the Trenches, of, like, the Allies and the Germans playing a soccer game. Mm-hmm. Sorry, football.
the footy.
On Christmas, and then going back to fighting each other the next day. Like, doesn't it just kind of show us how stupid all war is?
Absolutely. Basically? Yeah, that's a good point.
But, yeah, so when you said that, I'm like, well, that's just all war, because we have to dehumanize the other in order to make someone kill them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it is like, yeah, what has this done to their nations? And do they trust each other? Do they want revenge? Is there mm-hmm. some individual in there who's like, wait a second, no, I'm not going to just be peaceful just because you say. We're not just all soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like it changed location a lot, too.
Oh, so much.
So much. We were on so many different continents. We've seen that before in Marvel films. And I do like that not every single Marvel film is the same. Like, mm-hmm. we have a Marvel film like Ant-Man that takes place in one city, you know?
Right, right.
Versus, like, these ones that take place all across the world. But I found that they switched locations so frequently, and the scenes that lasted in each location seemed to be quite short.
Totally.
So we're like, wow, we went all the way here just for this four-line scene. I'm waiting for some reveal of why Val is around so much in Phase 4. We saw her in Falcon and Winter Soldier. We saw her at the end of Black Widow. And now here. It feels like it's building towards something.
Mm-hmm.
But she's in so little that I can't piece anything together. Like, what are they aiming towards? And you don't have to spoil anything for me if you know. I am like, that is such a get in Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I do find, like, a film like this, they had so many gets. The second Richard Schiff came on the screen, we were like, Toby! Yeah. West Wing! And then it was kind of like a, when there was a scene between Richard Schiff and Julia Louis-Dreyfus, it was like the worlds were meeting of West Wing and Veep. That was like, wow, mind blown! And then Lake Bell was in the beginning and then apparently died in that
for
helicopter.
A teeny little bit.
And that's fine. Like, people can come in. But then, like, Michaela Cole was in it, too. And we were like, yes! And Michaela Cole did have a little bit more to do. But again, like, not nearly enough.
No, no. I wanted way more of her.
Yeah.
No, to go back to the Val thing, though. Oh. She's a great example of, yeah, you're having this little tease of, like, oh, look, them. And it's tricky with Val because, yes, they are trying to start planting seeds of something, but honestly, they're not doing a good enough job because right now it just feels like random cameos as opposed to, what's really going on
exactly.
here? It's just so we can have some sparky banter between her and Martin Freeman, which was great, but I want to get some more structure building within the... because. This is where we are with Phase 4. We have no idea what the structure is in the world right now. Because it's been pulled apart because of Infinity Saga and the snap and everything. And it's been pulled apart by the lack of cohesion because of COVID. So they're in a tough spot right now. And I understand why we're in this position. But I just hope that we can start to make more intentional choices.
Yeah, my attention's kind of waning. You know, I never have kept up on, like, Marvel news and stuff like that. So I don't know what's coming. But yeah, I mean, I have felt recently like the films just aren't really reaching me, or they're just a little bit clunky. I'm not going to say like this blanket statement, but it is a bit, okay, can Marvel go on forever as the cinematic universe? I know you want it to.
Whether I want it to or not, yes, it can and it will. I'm here to tell you.
For sure, for sure. But I guess, like, how much longer can it go on? I'm sure that they're still making bajillions off these movies. Mm-hmm. And they'll keep making more. But, like, when do they go, okay, well, we're losing audiences. Or, you know, I'm sure also the last few years, like, for every industry, COVID is, like, not a good, like, stats from COVID times are not reflective of, like, usual non-pandemic years. So if they're like, oh, our audience numbers are down for whatever, we go to streaming sooner, that's not representative of what it actually would be if we didn't just go through a pandemic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But they have like super smart minds and like buckets of millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. So I feel like we can be a little bit more demanding as audiences and go
absolutely.
Like, kind of losing me. How long can you keep us coming back when it's a little bit medium?
Yeah.
This film was fine, but I didn't feel moved by it and I wasn't entirely excited by it and the locations changed so quickly. I have been quite moved and delighted and entertained by a fair number of these films so far. Not always the ones that are the most critically acclaimed or highest grossing numbers, but... And actually, I don't even pay attention to the numbers. So. But yeah, you're right. It feels like they're just making a product that you can just like open up, swallow it down.
Oh, yeah. And that
wait for the next one.
Like Marvel right now, they're not trying to make healthy, nourishing things. They're making
mm-hmm.
Doritos.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to keep us coming back because we love Doritos.
And also it's chemically engineered to make you desire more the second you swallow the last one.
Yeah, exactly. Totally. That's what I mean when I say I want to get back to that method of storytelling where, like you were saying, great standalone films that are building towards something. And I feel like we can get back to that.
Maybe they don't need to build towards something. Because for me, watching the Infinity Saga, I wasn't conscious of it building towards something, even though I should have known because I saw posters that said Endgame a few years prior to watching them. But like, I didn't know that it was building towards something. And so until I knew that it was reaching kind of a climax moment, I wasn't going, I wonder where this all is going.
No, totally. So I'm saying I want to get back to that, where they're making standalone films that feel standalone, but they know it's building to something, but we can't see it.
I hear you. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just kind of thinking, I think what this felt like to me is a TV series script that they condensed into a film. Because of all of the different chunks that we had, it felt like maybe at one time this was optioned into a TV series as an experiment. And then they were like, ooh, look at all this story stuff we can do. Ah, now it's too long, but let's condense that.
Just like I wish that Falcon and Winter Soldier had been a movie.
Agreed.
You know?
Like, agreed.
I think that could have been a very exciting movie, but it was dragged out into like 9 episodes or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay, well, let's move it along here a little bit.
Well, I want to kind of start at the top and go through some things that stood out to me.
Okay.
I loved the moment of silence that we got for Chadwick Boseman through the Marvel title card. You know, these days, different directors are putting all kinds of quirky music over top of it. They're not using the typical anthem, which is fun. But I thought it was really powerful having it just be wind and images of Chadwick Boseman. That was really beautiful. I really appreciated that off the top. And it was beautiful and it just so tragic thinking about how he's gone. And then how meta it is that now we have to write into this fictitious story that his character is gone. And then in the film, the fact that he was dying of something that he wasn't telling anyone about. And then when he did tell people, it was already too late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it hit me how poignant it was and how weird this world is of fictitious storytelling.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we got to follow Shuri in this film, because I really like her as a character, and I think her journey was really interesting. I was really surprised that she became the Black Panther, though. I wanted Nakia to become the Black Panther. And it
I'm with you.
Would make more sense, because Nakia is actually a trained fighter and has all the innate skills. You know, like, becoming the Black Panther, getting the superpowers does not necessarily just instantly make them a good fighter. Now, not to say that Shuri hasn't been trained like that, because she's a Wakandan, she's royalty, so she probably received some training, of course. But I love Nakia as a character more than Shuri. So I was hoping that it would be her.
But I really liked Shuri as a character in Black Panther, and she was given so much energy and spunk, and I guess, like, she was a great foil for the other characters, and she brought so much humor, but also, like, brains and, like, that kind of
so contemporary.
And I felt like she was pushed into this mold of, like, more serious and more like, solemn. It just, it kind of robbed the character of a lot of personality for me, because she did stand out as a character that I really liked and was so excited to see that they were back, but without a lot of personality. It just, it wasn't, the character didn't grab me as much as in Black Panther. So I am totally with you. Nakia is such a wonderful character, and she was kind of a side character in this.
Yeah, I don't know why that was. I liked the explanation of why she hasn't been around. She had to mourn T'Challa when he was snapped away. And then also the fact that they had a secret child. Like, that's cool. I really like that. And it works for me as an explanation.
But I'm with you. She's so fierce. I also love Okoye.
Okoye, I think, is one of my new favorite characters in the MCU. I mean, I loved her in all the other appearances. But this film particularly, I was like, I really, really dig Okoye. And I love the scene between her and Ramonda because both of them made really great points. You know, Okoye trying to fight for her job as Dora Milaje. But then the Queen also bringing up good points about, like, when Killmonger took over, you supported him. And I told you I didn't want you to take my daughter. And you did anyway. And you lost her. Angela Bassett was, like, laying down so much acting power in that scene too. But yeah, like, the spunk that Okoye has and how amazing it is to watch her fight.
Can you remind me, why did the Dora Milaje show up in Falcon and Winter Soldier?
Bucky had been staying in Wakanda, and they had given him a vibranium arm. Now, this is a gripe that I have with the film, too. And I'll say right off the bat, they can't get around it because Chadwick Boseman passed away. But storytelling-wise, I don't understand how, if they found out that T'Challa was dying, why didn't they put him in cryo-freeze like they put Bucky in?
Yeah, they really can't get around that. Like, I was also thinking, well, when Shuri goes to the ancestral plane and can talk to Ramonda, her mother, wouldn't she be able to go and talk to T'Challa?
Again, I was like, ooh, they're in a tricky spot, because you can't have T'Challa because Chadwick Boseman isn't there. So that was one of my favorite scenes in the film. Having Killmonger suddenly show up, like, first of all, ooh, yes, we love Michael B. Jordan. Like, great to see him back. And as much as I'm with you, I didn't like this arc for Shuri. I thought it was an excellent moment in the film of...
about vengeance.
Being a pivotal moment for the character. And him representing, like, you got it too. I'm not all wrong.
He's got some good points.
That's why he's one of the best villains.
Yeah.
Same with Namor, too. Namor was a wonderful, I'm not even going to say villain, just character. Because he's trying to protect what's precious to him. And
totally. And has had so much trauma and displacement.
I do find the heel wings not the most aesthetically pleasing.
A little corny.
It's a little
Hercules.
Hermes.
Can I say, though, it was, like, very scary, that first scene.
With
the Talokan beings kind of, like, rushing up onto that ship, and, like, all the dudes jumping off the ship.
And underwater too.
It was so creepy.
Yeah,
I did really not like that. Like, I mean, I liked it for the tension and everything. That was like, what's going on? And like, who are these Avatar people? And like,
yes,
oh
Blue.
My gosh. Just, yeah, really, really tense. Do you think the whales resent the Talokan beings for using them as their transit?
Maybe that's what they feel purpose from. They go to do a good day's work as being an underwater transit vehicle. Hey, maybe orcas are just looking to have a job like that. Mm. Like, look at the way that sheepdogs, like, need to herd sheep.
It's biological.
Maybe that's what orcas are.
Orcas surface and they're like, look at that donkey over there pulling stuff. I could do that.
I'd like that.
I could do that much faster.
Instead, they have me jumping out of the water and sticking out my tongue for audiences.
Yeah.
Don't they know I could ferry them?
Give me a job. Give me a purpose.
Yeah. I loved in that boat scene when there was just one mysterious head bobbing in the water and the singing. I was like, oh, I love when stories take historical myths of like sirens beckoning sailors to their death. That's where it came from.
Yeah, it looked like an otter. And they all bobbed up. I was like, otters.
A float of otters. Yeah, I love that scene. I also thought it was strange that the people of Talokan could speak underwater.
Yeah, it was super weird.
And there were okay, so maybe there's some kind of anatomical explanation within their...
They have gills.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe they don't need air to push past their vocal folds.
Yeah.
But when we were first swimming through Talokan and nobody had spoken yet except for above water...
Yeah.
I was really hoping, are they going to use sign language?
Yeah.
Or some form of
Would they have
hand
evolved?
Gestures? Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I think like speech pathologists everywhere who watched that movie were like, that couldn't happen.
I don't know. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't really take all that much away from the film. But as soon as he said a sentence underwater, I was like, what?
I know. And I know so much of these films are like, you know, magic and fantasy. And all
exactly.
That stuff
That's
too.
What I'm hung up on.
I know. Like, really, I think that we're just like kind of bringing out our minor complaints right now because we're like, it didn't really work for us. And so here we are with a list of like these things that wouldn't have grated on us if the film was just that much better.
Mm-hmm. The other inconsistency that really bothers me is now they've made synthetic purple herbs. And we have never gotten a concrete explanation for why more people don't use the purple herb to make a ton of superpowered people.
Yeah.
I just kept thinking, okay, you have some left in the bowl. Give some to Riri, give some to Nakia.
This is my constant complaint about like fantasy or superhero films is like, I don't know what any of the rules are. So I'm just going along for like the story and like boiling it down to its essential. What is the story about? It's about like fathers and daughters. It's about, you know, brothers and sisters. It's about like some kind of relationship or whatever. I have to boil it down to that because like if I'm thinking about like, which suit is better than the other one? Or like all of a sudden when vibranium was introduced in whatever movie that it was first introduced in, it was like, this is the strongest metal that's ever existed. And it's only found in this one place. And I was like, okay, until the next most strongest thing comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like apparently vibranium is the strongest thing. Has there been anything stronger? Cause like sometimes it can kill things and sometimes it can't.
Yeah.
I can't think about the rules of these things and how like it's like the storytellers just are like whatever's most convenient.
The explanation I guess I'm holding on to is that the purple herb isn't just about endowing super strength. It is a passage into the ancestral plane, which that is something that is only bestowed on one person at a time.
Mm-hmm.
That is the explanation I'm kind of making up for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, all that sort of question aside of could other people take the purple herb, that was my favorite part of the film, I think. When she did go to the ancestral plane and talk with Killmonger, and he was pressing her on, like, why did you take the herb if you didn't think that the ancestral plane was real? You took it because you wanted vengeance and you wanted the power, but now she's having this discussion about what do I do with this power? What's in me? What potential do I have?
Hmm.
You know, she's going on her own hero's journey a little bit.
It's really funny to hear you say herb. I know that's what they say in the movie, but we say herb. Wouldn't it be funny, though, if in the movie they were like, the purple herb?
Well, I did notice in the first Black Panther, they say the heart-shaped herb. And in this one, they say the heart-shaped herb.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I also grew up saying herb.
You did?
Yeah.
I feel like herb is way more British and Canadian.
For sure, but I don't know.
It's always been herb. It does sound kind of French, like herbe.
Herbe.
But I don't know. I just know it to be herb. Like you plant an herb garden. You don't plant a herb garden.
I plant a herb garden.
Herb is like...
Herbert.
Herbert. Yeah. Herbert Hoover. Or Herbie the love bug. Was that a thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, the love bug. Wow. That came out of some recess of my brain. I don't know where I pulled that from. But yeah, Herb. Anyway, Herb is a man's name.
It can be both.
Anything else? Tell me. Score? Ludwig Göransson.
Ludwig Göransson, back for his second round with Ryan Coogler. I really like the score. It was a lot of similar sounds to the first one, but we got some really cool new vocal stuff for Talokan. And in the final fight particularly, there was some really cool choral stuff that was building the tension. A lot of vocals and drums, which makes so much sense for, you know, these cultures that are so old and are about storytelling and people. I really like Ludwig Göransson's work. I hope he gets to branch into, I hope he gets to branch into more of the MCU, but I'm actually more of the opinion now these days that I think I want composers to sort of have their films that they work on.
Hmm. Okay.
For example, I love Michael Giacchino. He's one of the best composers out there, but he's composing so many different films right now. Like he started off by doing Doctor Strange for Multiverse of Madness. It was taken away from Michael Giacchino, or maybe he was busy, not taken away, but it was Danny Elfman instead. Mm-hmm. So that confused the sound for me.
Hmm.
And then Michael Giacchino did Thor Love and Thunder instead of Mark Mothersbaugh. And that, so like for me, I think I would actually prefer if people did stick to their films, because that forms a cohesion of sound storytelling.
Okay, but it's hard enough for us to get like four friends together for a dinner party. Like imagine how hard it is to get the whole creative teams together for all these films.
Sure.
I mean, I'm sure that our four friends would come over for a dinner party if they were offered like millions of dollars and like the chance of like Oscar nominations and stuff. But like, it's really hard to get people together and like everyone's busy. So maybe they called Mark Mothersbaugh and he's like, you know what, Kevin, you can go suck on a lemon.
That's very healthy.
You do it.
Maybe Kevin had a touch of the scurvy.
Anyway, you know, it's hard to get people together these days.
Yeah, I enjoyed this film, but ultimately it does leave me feeling like, okay, this felt like it was just a placeholder for what's coming next.
Yeah, and maybe they had a ton of plans for Chadwick, and then they had to figure something else out.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's okay. And they plan these films like so far in advance that then they pivoted. And maybe we will see something leading towards like a grand culmination. But yeah, I'm left a little bit cold by the most recent films.
Well, we're not stopping this train anytime soon. We're going to go see a film in a couple days.
We are.
Early press screening.
Woo!
We haven't been available for the past several, but now we finally are.
Yeah, I know. Feels nice.
Yeah, a date morning. 10 a.m.
Actually, it is our 9-year anniversary. We're going to see the Ant-Man press screening.
Yeah.
How cute. No sleeping in.
Nope.
This is really fun. So how do we end this on a high note? That's a high note. Great. Wrap it up.
Package it. Ship it.
Post it. Tag it.
Bop it.
It would mean so much to us if you could leave us a rating and a review on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at MCU and Me Podcast. So tell your friends. Thanks.